Welcome to the Declarations of War podcast. This is episode 57. Thanks for tuning in. We are your hosts, Alexa Card, Ninja Turtle.
Hey, guys.
And CSM representative, Ali Aras.
Hey, what's up?
Still alive.
I did successfully return from Iceland, despite inclement weather in Boston.
She has traveled the Atlantic. I presume you went by the Atlantic.
Yeah, I flew over the Atlantic. It's actually slightly shorter than flying across the United States from where I live. So it's not even that terrible of a flight, and only a 4-hour time difference.
Shoutouts. I'd like to give a shout-out to Evolution, particularly Sir Mole and London Hilton for hosting an absolutely amazing EVE meetup over this past weekend. I drove 3.5 hours each way, so 7 hours total, to participate, and I was absolutely glad I did. It was a blast. So thank you very much for opening your house and all the great barbecue food and, so good.
Hey guys, Turtle here. I want to give a shout out to my buddy Chris Belit. He's an old bro of mine, and he's also probably one of the best solo Blops pilots I know. He lives and breathes for multi-billion-isk Tengus out ratting alone, so mind yourselves in Nullsec, and watch out for him.
And last but not least, I want to give a shout-out to everyone at CCP who hung out with the CSM, everyone who we met. You guys were great, in particular CCP Goliath, who was responsible for a very fun Friday night, and also CCP Dolan, who was sort of directing everything, and CCP Rise, who helped me out when I was looking for a place the last day in Iceland.
All right, we will get to the summit in just a little bit. There's a lot to talk about there. But first we're going to talk about some poll results. We took a poll on the last podcast about sentry drones, which is a pretty hot button balancing issue right now. Sentry drones are either pretty OP, they're good but really only dominant in the Alliance tournament, or they suck. 36% say OP, 54% said they're good but not overbalanced, and 10% of our listeners think they suck.
The question here is how much of that is sentry drones versus the whole drone assist mechanic? Because in the Alliance tournament, I think sentry drones themselves might be OP. Otherwise, on, you know, just sort of general tranquility, I think it's the drone assist combined with the sentry drone platform more than anything else.
I think drone assist in general just isn't a mechanic that, it doesn't feel Eevee. You know, it's taking all of your agency and completely putting it in the hands of another player to do all your work for you. I mean, really, if you have yourself on a logistic watch list, you launch your drones, you could assist them to somebody, you could completely avert your eyes from the client in the middle of a PvP situation for minutes at a time and have no drop in performance. That just seems strange.
Yeah, it's true. I like them for stuff like decloaking. I think some of my favorite early, you know, newbie memories were flying the decloaking frigate at a gate camp, and especially when there was someone we really wanted to kill coming in, being able to, you know, it felt like, well, everyone's given their drones to me and they're all counting on me to achieve this important objective, but that's sort of a niche use compared to the whole drone assist and fleet fights thing.
Which is kind of funny because they just made it like that much easier to assist drones to people because you can do it through the watch list now.
Yeah, I mean, just because the mechanic is maybe a little bit weird or OP doesn't mean the UI should be terrible.
Weird, true. I am very pleased about the drone UI changes coming in general. Drag and drop is awesome. But I think from a gameplay perspective, it makes a lot of sense to remove assist. I mean, putting the drones around a frigate to help them decloak things, that is good. But maybe there can be another way to accomplish that same thing without actually going through the mechanic as it currently stands.
Yeah, I mean, it's also possible that people can just be better at decloaking in a frigate. I've certainly been decloaked by enough sabers in Catch to know that you can do it without drones. Or not Catch, Curse. you know, that scene all sec I live in now.
I don't know. I think, like, it's hard to... Because you're right, you got to separate those two. There is a difference between, like, trying to decloak a frigate and then, like, having, you know, six filled-up Megathron fleets all with a couple sentry drones apiece, and they can all just assist one person each in that fleet. You know, that's a little fucked up. But I don't think that blob, the size of people when they added the assist and guard on drones, like, I don't think the size of fights was... That scale wasn't envisioned, I don't ever think, and so I don't... I think the mechanic is cool, but, like, I think it's just a byproduct of blobs using it, you know? Because there's plenty of legit reasons to use it in small gang PvP and stuff. But it does
something
become...
as similar as you could only assist drones to someone on your watch list. That would cap the number of people that could do it at the watch
or
list size.
In your squad.
Yeah, or squad.
Because you could put anybody on your watch list.
I mean, hey, that could be cool. If it's squad-based, then you have, like, mini target callers on all your squad commanders, which gives them something to do.
Yeah, and it makes the whole being in a squad and a fleet something other than, you know, what you use for boosts. But on the other hand, you're still reducing the number of people who you need to be good in a fleet to, you know, five squads per wing, five wings per fleet. So that's 25 people at max who need to be paying attention to their computers and not watching movies on the other monitor or whatever.
Yeah, it's not as ideal as getting rid of it entirely.
Well.
In my view.
I don't know. That's like 24 more people paying attention than before. You know,
yeah,
when you kind of think about it. And then you're also making the step of making Logis more relevant too, because if you only have a squad worth of assisted drones blowing through something, you know, it's not blapping through targets like a couple hundred sentries is.
Let's assume those squad commanders are calling different targets. There's nothing that says they has to.
Yeah, that's true.
Even if they're all on one target, though, it's not the completely coordinated alpha that you get. To do that, you kind of have to do the whole priming your guns thing.
Are we even going to touch the patch notes tonight?
Nah. We've been working on the patch notes for the past couple podcasts. There's no point to do them all at once. I mean, I do want to talk about a little bit about the possible metagame changes that are coming with the command ship changes, but I don't think we need to go through line by line.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool UI stuff. I can't think of too many, other than the command ship changes, I can't think of too many other things that are, and ship rebalancing, that's the biggest thing that happened in 1.1 as far as I'm aware.
Skill menu? Come on.
Skill menu's
huge.
Awesome.
I've been staring at the same menu for like 8 years. You can't change that now.
But it's better for new players, and you can adapt.
Blah.
Everything makes sense now. It's all in a group with other skills that are like it, instead of
it
being in a group with other skills. Oh.
It makes too much sense. Like, when they changed the font, things became too clear.
It's now too easy to play Eve.
Yeah.
Alright, moving on, we're going to talk about our sponsor real quick. One of them, anyway. Eve Timecode. Buy 14 Eve Timecodes, get one free. EveTimecode.com, where your business counts. If you'd like to advertise in Declarations of War, shoot me a message in-game. Like save card. Alright, Eve News. There's been some interesting movements out in 00. Test and Tribal Ban moved to Cursed. First, Tribal Ban announced that they were going, and then Test announced they were also moving to the same area. Given the relationship they've had before, seems significant.
I would just like to state that I moved to Cursed first, and fuck this thing where everyone moves to the places where my alliance also decides to move. First it was NCDOT moved into Hasatine, now it's everyone, their grandmother and their brother, moving into Curse. We had some pizza deploying there as well. Fortunately, this time, Test and Tribal Ban did not move into my staging system.
Ali, my dear, you are the David Bowie of Nullsec. Trendsetter, if you didn't get that joke.
Boo.
No Bowie fans, huh? That's rough.
Sorry, man.
So what does this mean for your alliance? Now that Test and Tribal are there, do you see that as an opportunity to kill more people, or is it going to crowd you guys out?
Mostly an opportunity to kill more people. If you take a look at the tribal band Dotland map, you'll notice that there aren't a lot of them sticking around in Curse. It's less of a slope and more of a dramatic cliff. So, not as worried about them. I know Test has been heating up the region a little bit. We've had some good fights with Test in the past, so if they're going to be bringing out, 20 or 30 man gangs, it'll be some nice variety if they're going to be doing a bunch of dropping capitals on stuff or whatever. Then maybe I'll be less amused.
Well, definitely keep us abreast of the situation. Let us know what they're doing and who they're doing it to.
What's the worst that could happen, too? Because it's all NPC stuff.
Worst that can happen is you're camped in the station all the time, and then all of your alliance stops logging in.
And your moons get taken, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't, go out and have a fight, even if you can't get past the camp. Can't go out and have a fight without getting hot trapped on.
Can be pretty demoralizing. Something else. Yeah, I mean, we're going through the process right now of beating up on other people who live in our system and contesting assets and stuff like that, and so that's already a little bit rough sometimes.
So what do you guys think you're going to see from Test and Tribe then? Like, are we going to see a coordinated, unified effort to try and re-go? Because both alliances are pretty much at the same, hey, we got to start over a little bit point, you know?
I'd be shocked if they're not going to maintain blue and they're not going to do joint fleets. I don't know whether Test is going to just go in there and relax, or if they're actually going to make a play for the moon assets and things like that in the area. I know there are some pretty pricey moons there. I don't know who currently holds them. But, if they start to get serious about living in Curse, maybe that's the next step for them rather than their first move.
I'll let you know if I hear them hitting anything. I guess I have heard of them. I think I heard about them hitting some another local alliance, but I'd have to double check to be sure.
I don't really see a way that they can move to the NPC space and not take that kind of asset, because they're a really large alliance, and we touched on this when we were talking about their move to LoSec. They're gonna need income to sustain themselves. It's just a fact of life. Either that or they're gonna bleed people.
I mean, Tribe already hemorrhaged people, so.
Yeah, so did Test.
Right next door, against all authorities, a very old name is rapidly reconquering their, what they consider their motherland, Ketch.
And the cycle begins anew.
Yeah, it used to be a yearly thing, against all authorities would lose all their space. You'd wait a couple months, and then they'd have it all back again. This time, they got knocked out a little more forcefully than before, and I think they stayed down longer, but they seem to have recovered. Not all of the same corps are there, but it's the same alliance. Presumably, most of their leadership is intact, or at least I would say about half of it. And they're going. They want Ketch, and it looks like they're going to get it. No one is really standing to oppose them. However, there's some potential thunder brewing in that Providence Coalition, that's aka CVA and all those guys, had taken a few systems in Northern Ketch while AAA had been knocked out this most recent time, and AAA has been asserting that they were going to retake them. And this even led to Voltician Cult shooting down and onlining AAA TCU.
Well, I can talk about that a little bit, even though I'm obviously not in the Providence block anymore, as everyone listening to our most recent episode is aware. Volition Cult there's always been a sense that, Providence should expand so that we have that entire Northern Ketch pipeway. And Volition Cult was making some overtures in that direction. It may be the case that what AAA is threatening is a repeat of the time when AAA drove Provi Block out of Providence in return for Volition Cult basically fucking with their space. There weren't a lot of systems that got taken by Providence after AAA went away. ERVK maybe, but it's certainly the case that they are contesting the Northern Catch systems that or were contesting the Northern Catch systems that AAA is moving into.
Yeah, we're talking about IS-R, BR-N, ERVK, and ZQ-Z.
ZQ-Z has been a Providence system since I've been playing, so before AAA got pushed out the last time. But that does represent an incursion into areas that CVA has held even since the last time AAA was in the area.
It's interesting, because it actually hasn't even been a year. It was like early December onward when AAA started their slide or whatever, and they really didn't lose most of everything until halfway through January, so it hasn't even been a year. They've recovered almost all of the corporations they had once in terms of numbers. They're probably only about 1,000 short of their member count, so they've been like in this steady rebuilding period since May or June almost, when you look at the statistics. And I mean, they're back up to where they kind of were before, with a fraction of the sovereignty and a fraction of the cost, as it is now anyways.
And Catch is going to be worth more than it used to be with the new moon rebalance, which is good for them. But even if it wasn't, and even if AAA didn't recover as much as you're saying it did, I think even AAA at half their old strength could probably take CVA's coalition. I mean, we fought in Providence. Allie and I did. It took a week for CVA's participation to get cut in half from, like, 400 tops to 200 tops. And then the U.S. time zone was, like, what, 150, 200, down to 75, 100 if they were super lucky. And if you generously included all of their incursions / Haven fits with like faction local reps,
beautiful fits.
And they've been under, like, first it was your little civil war, then NCDOT came to mess with them, and if they get into war with AAA, it would be the third in a long string of very trying experiences for them in the realm of soft warfare. I don't see them surviving. Well, I mean, I see them surviving. I don't see them pushing AAA back, even for a second, even if they decide to fight.
Yeah, if they decide to fight, I think that it would be a repeat of Providence Block pushed out to LoSec. Random renters move in. Providence Block grinds the region away from those renters once everyone's bored again. Basically, again, the same thing that we've seen repeated a couple of times so far.
Well, and they threaten the Pravi Block, too. I mean, like...
Yeah, screw with our retaking Catch, or you're gone.
Yeah, basically. I mean, do they have the strength to, I mean, fight both fronts?
Who has the strength to fight both? Which fronts?
AAA.
Yeah, they're not getting
contested strength to fight.
They're not getting contested in Catch at all. Initiative has given up that space because they have their eyes on Delve, which we're going to be talking about in our next story. So they're barely being fought at the moment. So if they wanted to turn all their attention to Providence, I think they could do it with little consequence.
Yeah, also, I mean, we've got, fallen off my chair. It's also true that Providence, when I was in Providence, there was the rule that, you know, thou shalt not fuck with Ketchsov. And the reason for that rule was because this one time AAA kicked CVA out of Providence. And so I would deeply love to be a fly on the wall of the leadership forums right now to see how Volts, you know, well, we're gonna do what we want, is being taken.
Boy, that Volt. No end of trouble for the entire block. They started the whole mess with Sound getting kicked out.
Yep. And now they're doing their own thing, so I'm a little, you know, hoping that they're the ones who are on the receiving end of that sort of thumbscrew pressure, although I doubt we will see Providence Civil War Mark II, as I think we're the only ones crazy and or dumb enough to try and do that.
Yeah, I don't see Volt being able to stand on their own against almost anyone. They just have poor leadership decision making, poor fleet comps, poor participation. That's just the way it is. They're really very dependent on their coalition, which is why I'm surprised so soon after the initial shakeup that they're, you know, back causing trouble again and then having to run to CVA and Co. to protect them. Okay. Speaking of initiative, we're looking at a powder keg forming in Delve and Quirius right now. Black Legion announced that they were hired by Solar, or at least they were going to work with Solar, I don't know if it's an official hire or what, to invade Quirius, which presumably NCDOT will defend. CFC has all but formally announced their invasion of Delve, or they may have actually announced it at this point, I'm not entirely sure, but they're starting to take systems gradually, so if it's not going to be an official coalition invasion, it surely will be soon. Pizza's taken systems in Delve and will presumably support Black Legion in whatever they do, and Initiative is in Delve, not really sure who they're working with and in what capacity yet. And, you know, the parties that tend to follow these groups around, like 401k looking to hit Clusterfuck Coalition, etc., and I assume Nully will come in to help NCDOT, presumably. So it's looking to be not a complete redux of the Fountain War, because obviously Test will be gone, but a lot of the same players are arranging themselves on the board to have another go at each other. Pandemic Legion will be involved. I'm not sure in what capacity, but they almost certainly will be. That could be big.
Yeah, I believe Init is now blue with the CFC, so they're working with the CFC in Delve, so that's not going to be a particular axis of conflict.
Well, it'll still be an axis of conflict, just Initiative will be on that side of it.
Right. So that means it's Initiative versus Pizza and I guess whoever else is trying to come
Pizza,
on in
there. BL Solar.
Right.
And probably NCDOT and the rest of N3 Coalition versus both of them.
So it's like a much less organized Fountain War in which everyone's on their own side and trying to make off with as much of the money as they can.
Yeah, basically put Black Legion on the anti-CFC side, swap Test for Solar Fleet. It'll be interesting. Definitely going to be the conflict, I think, to keep our eyes on, unless AAA does, in fact, invade Providence, which will be far more amusing for many reasons.
That would be great. It would be a little bit funny, you know, because we stopped pushing it in our little civil war, deciding not to go so far as to drive CVA out of Providence, mostly because we couldn't decide what to do with it. It'll be funny if, you know, within the next however long, that just ends up happening regardless.
Turtle, does Aquila and Co. have any plans on coming out of the wormholes to fight in this conflict? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of. It's not really,
Because Verge did have an impact on the previous the
yeah.
War. They did make some appearances in some pretty pivotal fights.
But that was never, like, the intention. It was never, like, politically motivated is the thing. When you look at Verge, it's like there's basically no political motivation whatsoever to do anything. Because you're off kind of in your own corner, just doing your own thing, and you get null sec exits and you go PvP. When big shit like that comes up, you know, you do it for the good fights, basically, but that's really all it's for. There's really basically no political motivation to do anything in that alliance. So, honestly, I don't think so. If a good fight comes up and it looks to be something that we want to do, sure.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's not like as big of a group as you'd think, to be honest, which isn't a bad thing, but it's like, hey, go redeploy here, go redeploy there, we're going to do this and this and this for fucking, you know, political reasons. That shit doesn't fly whatsoever.
Well, it'll be interesting. Maybe Noir will get involved. There's enough groups there with tons of money that it's entirely possible we'll get hired in some capacity or another.
Yeah, sounds exciting.
Speaking of contracts, no official contracts to report, but we did have some fighting up in Molden Heath. We went up there to, you know, just poke the bear, hang out with some of our low-sec friends. We've got one corp up there that sort of uses that as their staging base, so we went to go spend some time with them. You know, do the things they wanted to do, defend posses. And we roamed into Great Wildlands a little bit, and we roamed into Northern Derelict a little bit. Both of which were pretty quiet, actually. And then, you know, all of a sudden we jumped to Southern Derelict en route to Catch, where we are now, and it couldn't be busier. We got hot dropped by Pandemic Legion and Shadow Cartel on the same day. It's crazy. So, not a terrible amount to talk about here, but hopefully I'll have some good stories for you guys in the Catch campaign and whatever comes after that. This week in Mercs. Just two stories to talk about. The Devil's Warriors Alliance, which is a longstanding member of the Merc Contracts channel, recruited the... Oh, go ahead.
I just said, I've met them. They warnect us.
Yeah, they're nice-ish guys. They're pretty stable Empire Corp. They've been around for a while. And I don't know how they rank up against, like, Marmite and Horrors in Space, because we haven't fought against them in a while, but we did fight them previously, and they were tough. You know, they fought well. Unfortunately, they recruited the Band Corp Rebirth, which we went into detail in the previous episode. And, you know, after seeing what happened with the granting an exception to Horrors in Space to have Rebirth in their alliance, you know, no good came of it. So this time around, we weren't giving an exception to the blacklisting. And unfortunately, Devil's Warriors chose to be removed from the channel rather than kick Rebirth out. So that's the way it is.
So you gave them a choice, huh?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I don't care if they have Rebirth in their alliance or not. You know, if they want to kick them out, I have no problem keeping them listed, because like I said, they were in the channel for a long time and they're consistently solid mercs, except for this, which calls a lot of that into question. So it's just a simple thing, like, we're not going to tolerate groups like Rebirth in either with their own alliances, like they were banned the first time, or in somebody else's alliance that they took over, like they were banned the second time. You know, it's enough. It's enough. We're done. zero tolerance for the drama and problems that they cause, because, you know, if something happens, it's up to the mods to be dealing with it, and all it does is damage the reputation of the channel. So, they knew the risks recruiting them. We talked to the leadership, explained why Rebirth was banned, reminded them they were banned, told them that we can't have, you know, a corp like that in their alliance and still have them listed. They still decided to keep them around, so that's the way it is. And the other piece, Declarations of War, your favorite podcast, was featured by the community team, which is really awesome.
It was. I was surprised to see it. I had nothing to do with it, actually.
Yeah, I got the email when I was at the barbecue. And I was like, oh, okay, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I just booted up my launcher, and it's like, oh, you should listen to the Declarations of War podcast. Well, thank you, launcher, I do.
You can also find us on the fan site listing at community.eveonline.com, where apparently we do, quote, fan art and fiction, news, podcast, and, catch this, we blog.
Ooh.
eat your heart out, Ripper Tag.
That should be Ninja Turtles' new thing. Better blogger than Ripper. Ripper Hitler Tag.
I didn't say that.
So yeah, thanks to CCP Gargant for hooking us up with that. Really appreciate it, and hopefully a lot of you guys are listening to this podcast for the first time, and you're liking what you hear. Get involved, post a comment up, vote in our polls, and subscribe to us on iTunes. We are trying to make this as big as possible, and we're happy to hear your voice. We're always active on Twitter. You can reach us there. At GRRUSSO for myself. It's at SCHERTT, I believe, for you, Turtle?
Yep.
Ali, because I get it wrong so often, what is your Twitter handle?
It is at Ali _of_space.
Right.
Of space.
Of space, not from
in
space.
Space.
Like, Ali, as in I come from space.
Whoever owned in space got some strange tweets. Probably didn't even play. You were just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, they just thought it was a cool name.
If your MerCorp is doing something interesting, send your story over to me. Alexiv Card, yeah, or tweet it at me, and that'll work too. We're happy to talk about more units on the podcast. This is the only podcast in EVE which sort of specializes in dealing out this mercenary news, but we're not going to talk about it if we never hear it's going on.
We'll just sit here and draw fan art and write fiction. I think it's because of your comics. The like, two friggin' comics you did.
There might be more than one.
Or the pony
or
gifts.
Or more than two, rather.
Pony gifts aside, we
there
need
is a little
comics.
My Little Pony fan art that finds its way onto the podcast as well. I wish I could say it wasn't all my fault, but it is. Our second sponsor, WeLoveFine.com. They make the fantastic Declarations of War shirts, which feature our logo, which is super sexy. Go to www.WeLoveFine.com/Eve to find our shirts, as well as shirts for Crossing Zebras and a few other Eve groups. So definitely check them out. The shirts are high quality. They're some of the favorite shirts that I own. And the logo that they made for us is absolutely breathtaking. So check it out. We've got a couple designs for you to pick from. And they all sales there help support the podcast. Okay.
And you should also probably buy a Voices from the Void shirt if you can still buy that, because that will be collectible, shall we say.
All right. Allie, you went to the CSM Summit.
I did. It was a lot of fun. It was gorgeous, despite being rather, you know, Icelandic weather. We heard about a ton of stuff. Just a ton of it. I'm going to go look at the schedule, pull the schedule up, and sort of go through it day by day. Obviously, there's some things that I can't talk about.
Let's get to the most important question.
All right.
What did you order for your first trip to Nani's?
I ordered the chicken sub, and I had it, and it wasn't that good. For my second trip to Nani's, I was drunk, and I ordered the lamb sub, and it was
the
best
go.
Thing I'd ever tasted.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
my
want chicken
third trip to Nani's, I had the lamb sub, but I was sober, and it was not as delicious. So I think the magical combination for Nani's is, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. after you've been at the bar for a while, and the lamb sub.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. The later you are toward, like, 6 a.m., so, like, 2, 3, 4, 5, the better it tastes.
I've had a lamb sub. I ate half, brought it home from the bar, passed out without refrigerating it, woke up, and then ate the other half, and it was still just as good.
I've been told and had the opportunity to do a little bit of testing that eating Nani's after you come back from the bar is a good way to prevent CSM Summit morning hangovers. It helps.
Next time you should really just push for like the Nani's on the table when you get there. Somebody else should really be handling that for you.
I could not handle that in the morning. That would be
cup of coffee, bacon sub.
No, that's too much food. Cup of coffee, though, that's important. Me and the CCP coffee machine became well acquainted over the course of this visit.
AKA Johnny Five, things like so, from so the fucking future.
Those listeners who aren't familiar with the summit, you know, walk us through the day. You land on the plane, at least my first summit, I land on the plane, they bust us out to the hotel we were at, and then I had maybe 15 minutes, probably closer to 10, to get ready, and then we walked right over to CCPHQ and got started on doing work.
Okay, it's chilled out a little bit since then. Most of the group, I landed Monday night at about midnight. Most of the group landed Tuesday morning. The summit didn't start until Wednesday. So everyone had a day to get over their jet lag. And that's, you know, anywhere from myself, I was only 4 hours behind, to Mike Azariah and Rippard Tegg. We're both representing the West Coast and we're 7 hours off of their home time zone. So land on the plane, for the folks who got there in the morning, they all got bused to the hotel. The plan was going to be take a nap, but they weren't able to check in, early. So, instead we just hung out they took a walk and I went back to my room and did other things, met up with CCP. This is when we got Nani's for the first time, took a little tour of CCPHQ, went home, went out. Hung out with people that night at Islansky Barn, which has been renamed Nora Magasin. It's apparently it's now better. Like, it was good.
Is it still the same inside?
It is, apparently, or at least mostly the same. Apparently, it was good Islansky, and then it got taken over, and it was bad Islansky, and then now it's good again, according to CCP. It's my first time there, obviously.
Yeah, my first trip over. Not only was it, like I said, you land and they ship just right off, but I was unable to sleep on the plane.
Like,
I just couldn't do it. So I was completely without a night's sleep, got there, and it was like basically a 9 hour day, 9.5 hour day minimum. And I was like, I'm chugging quaff. I'm eating every sugared thing they put in front of my face. Like, they brought in like a tray of brownies. Brownies, like, drenched it in powdered sugar. It's like, gotta stay up, gotta focus. And then they're like, hey, we're all gonna go out drinking. And it's like, I'm already gonna skip that part and go pass out. Save you the trouble.
Yeah.
It was good they gave you at least that day to collect yourselves. And did you also meet beforehand with the other CSMs to game plan, or were you already good to go from earlier meetings?
We met with them. There wasn't a lot of game planning per se, besides, you know, the stuff that's been our goals throughout the CSM term, the various projects that CSM would like to see happen, and maintaining and improving upon the CSM-CCP relationship. So we already knew kind of what we wanted to get out of it going in. So most of Monday was just Tuesday was just meeting people and getting to know each other and see what we're like in real life. So that was that. And then the summit started in earnest on Tuesday. Woke up at, you know, 8 in the morning, showered, ate some breakfast, went to CCP for a 9 a.m. meeting. And then we were at CCP. Our last meeting ended at 6 p.m. Went home, had a little bit of time to sort of shower and change, and then went out to the bar to hang out and drink and socialize. And that was the routine. Went out, stayed out, and then came back. I ended up logging onto my computer and talking to people on IRC and catching up with stuff back home and dealing with the occasional important information. So I got, you know, an average of like 6 hours of sleep a night. By the time that I came home, just completely wiped. But it was sustainable for the week that I did it.
Okay. Well, some of this was covered on Crossing Zebras, but I'll recap for our audience. What was participation like? Who was very active in the room? Who was very active on the remote connection? Who was the main voice for you guys? Was it well spread out? Was there anyone overly quiet? Or do we have to wait till the word count comes out for the CSM minutes?
It was pretty well spread out. As you might imagine, Jester Ripper Tegg was one of the more active people. Everyone in the room said something in most of... Everyone in the room contributed. Everyone's contributions were mostly, you know, on point and reasonable. Chitsa Jason was sort of the hero of the away team. He was at most of the sessions remotely. We had some technical difficulties going on, which meant that the remotes couldn't talk for most of the summit. So they were passing questions in through Skype and typing in the link chat for people in the room to read. We had the CPM there for some of the meetings, so they were able to put in their 2 cents on Dust. Hans Jägerblitzen was backing Traber up as the CSM veteran. So both of them had a certain amount of insight in terms of the way that it has been compared to the way that it is now. For people who were remote and couldn't make it, those people who had stuff like conflicts, there was a lot of participation in the Skype channel and on the CSM forums following the thing. I think this is the most active I've seen the CSM forums in weeks. Just because there are a number of follow-up topics from, oh, well, we were talking about this at the session, but, you know, can we go into it in more detail? Because obviously, so each session, for people who are listening, is only an hour, which means that you have 1 hour to get done whatever it is you're going to get done on, say, EVE PvE. And that's a huge topic. That's more than a one-hour topic. But if you gave the amount of time that it needs to everything that needed time, you would see the summit, like, double in length. So what happens is you just have to be efficient. And part of that means shutting down what is an interesting discussion and argument and saying, all right, let's take it offline. Let's, you know, schedule another meeting or whatever. So this week, CCP Dolan is meeting with a bunch of people to try and get us more meetings, basically. Some of which have already hit my calendar.
Excellent. Now, you described the overall tone of the summit as peaceful, which is a pretty stark contrast from the last summit that CSM7 had, which was anything but peaceful. Were you not... I mean, I was under the impression that there were at least one or two things that the CSM was working on that there were significant disagreements with CCP about. Did those disagreements get resolved earlier, or was it just a non-issue for the duration of the summit, or just a normal resolution there, or what happened?
For some of them, I'm not sure what things you're exactly...
Neither am I, because you wouldn't give me any details, but you told me there were a couple things that you guys were looking to get some hard answers on.
Yeah, some of those have been resolved. Some of those got resolved ahead of time. There was only one case where CCP came in and they said, hey, we're thinking about doing this, and we went, you what? But I guess I don't, there will be no lines in the minutes along the lines of several minutes of unproductive discussion followed. Most of the discussion was productive, if not, you know, where the CSM was always agreeing with CCP. I'm not sure how much this particular one will come out in the minutes, as it's one of the more NDA'd things. There'll be a couple of disagreements out in the minutes. But nothing... I mean, it sounded like... Correct me if I'm wrong, it sounded like the last summit that you were a part of was very much a case of the CCP-CSM communications had broken down beforehand.
Yeah. That's a fair characterization.
Yeah, we didn't have that as much. So the surprises, for what surprises there were fewer. And some of them were quite pleasant.
That's a refreshing change.
Yeah.
Yeah, pleasant surprises, right?
There are some parts of the winter...
How novel.
The planned winter expansion that I'm looking forward to, and I think other people will as well. Stuff which there's still time, I think, for us to work on the stuff which isn't the stuff that we were super excited about. I don't feel like there's anything that we are just like, well, this sucks and it's going to suck.
Is that roadmap that CSM7 did helping at all?
Which roadmap was that?
The one where we talked about the... Well, yeah,
development cycles and shit.
Oh, I think he means the development strategy.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the specifics of that. The way CCP is working these days is they're doing agile development stuff, and that development strategy meshes well with bringing the CSM in at certain points. One of the things we did at the end of every session was, where we had sessions with specific teams, was we said, look, if you want feedback, we can do that. We can do that for you, you know, on a fairly rapid turnaround basis, but you need to come to us with these things. And then left Dolan to do the setting up of the meetings and, you know, Skype channels and stuff to enable that feedback. So that part, I think, went really well. So I think we will be hearing more from CCP, to the point where I'm almost, you know, trying to look at how do we manage CSM workload so we don't bite off more than we can chew.
Yeah, and I suspect the development strategy is still a factor. I mean, the impact that it had on Odyssey was pretty remarkable, in my opinion. And I still see, like, with Odyssey 1.1, all the balance changes that they're putting in there, they're at least following, you know, that much of it. So, you know, it's probably, I mean, anything has to evolve. We wrote that like 8 months ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, almost a year ago is when we wrote that. In fact, it was over a year at this point. No, excuse me. Just less than a year. I got my months mixed up. So, you know, anything is going to have to evolve. They're going to refine it. I viewed that as a corrective starting point. And I think CCP is probably structurally approaching expansions in a much more healthier way. Otherwise, I really don't think they would have had a very peaceful summit at all.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of the structural problems that were plaguing CSM, the early part of CSM7's term, have mostly been resolved. There's, you know, I didn't get a sense that a lot of people were like, ugh, I don't want to talk to the CSM any more than just, ugh, I don't want to be in a meeting right now, which I can certainly understand. If it weren't for the fact that this was, you know, my cool internet spaceships hobby, I would also not want to be in a meeting for all day.
Speaking of plans, though, obviously, CCP Seagull, in her keynote, she laid out a future vision for EVE that a lot of players found pretty compelling. What's your sense of whether that vision is still the vision, and whether CCP is starting to take the preliminary steps they would, in your opinion, need to take to get there? Or is it like some previous fanfests where something shiny and awesome was laid out and then sort of left to wither on the vine.
I think I saw someone on Twitter from CCP saying that, yeah, this is still the, you know, that's still the 5-year vision thing, and then there's the 3-year roadmap. And that stuff that is the context that the CSM uses, or the framework that the CSM uses when reading proposals and giving feedback.
So speaking of the 3-year roadmap, is that like a concrete thing? Have you guys seen it or been involved in it?
Yes to both.
Excellent. That is a major improvement over CSM 7th term, because convincing them that they needed one was a pretty big deal at the time.
It was a thing that was presented. We talked about it at the summit. We enjoyed talking about it. I think there was Poetic Stanzel wrote an article about how he was worried that the CSM liked it too much or something like that. I'm not quite sure. But yeah, it's a good thing.
Good. That is a very good thing. Let's see. I've got a question you probably can't answer for the NDA, but I'll ask it anyway. Are there any major... not major necessarily, but, you know, like your little things listed off a number of features. There are some potential features laid out at FanFest. There are some features that were talked about during CSM 7's term that never really made it into Odyssey in time. Either specifically or generally speaking, you know, how much of features that were released in Odyssey or before Odyssey are, like, locked, finished? CCB doesn't think there's much to be gained from putting more work into them. I would list faction warfare as an example that CCB Soundway gives. How many features are likely to appear in the nearish term, and which ones are still being at least entertained in a long-term sense?
So do you mean, like, which features of ones that they've already released or the ones that they've talked about releasing are ones that they are going to release versus ones that they've sort of canned?
Yeah, like, are there things that were talked about that are just going to be, for the most part, dead in the water and people should lower their expectations dramatically on that? And are there others that are sort of on the roadmap? For instance, when Soundwave, you know, when we had the several lines of non-productive discussion followed, which... I think we're very productive, just not very cordial, perhaps.
I think that's probably my favorite line from Minutes, is that.
Yeah, about 15 minutes of arguing and shouting and all but table slapping. But, you know, the end of that did say, he's like, look, 00 might be on the roadmap, and we got a follow-up meeting based on that, and... Long story short, that's how the 00 resource rebalances, which came out in Odyssey, eventually came to be. It was from the fruits of that discussion. And he said he was looking at 00 anyway. He was considering it on the radar, whereas things like LOSEC, things like completely rebalancing POSs, or excuse me, completely redoing POSs, were not on said roadmap. Is there anything in broad strokes that they're not really looking at as a major issue right now that players have been talking about or was seen to be an issue last year and has sort of fallen off this year?
I'm thinking about that question both because I'm thinking about how I would answer it and how I would answer that if the NDA were magically something that I didn't have to worry about.
I gotta ask the hard questions, you know.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I've heard about that I don't know how much it is gonna get followed up on, but CCP said they would, is the hacking minigame. I say this based on a blue post on the public forums, and that's something that I want to talk to CCP a little bit more about, just to figure out where that's at, and figure out, you know, if they're not iterating on that, what are they doing instead? Because that was something that you know, CCP had been excited about and had been excited about the potential for iteration on. Obviously,
the players team as well, I think.
Yeah, players as well. Excited about or worried about iteration on iteration or lack thereof on. So that's. I mean, that's, I guess, the only thing that I would put as negative. There's certainly stuff that we've talked to CCP about and worked with CCP about that players have brought forward. What stuff that is and what its status is where I sort of drift off into the vague NDA land.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait for the minutes on that.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing with the... And this is something that we were pushing to CCP when we were trying to explain why they should be using us more. The big thing that the CSM can do is we can provide them feedback and put things forward without, with the understanding that if they talk about something that gets us totally excited, we will not be too bummed when it doesn't appear. Or if we are bummed, it won't be because they broke their promise. So much as it will be because whatever it was that they were doing was fixing a major pain point, and we can then look at that as, well, can you still consider addressing this pain point? Which is a different sort of phrasing than...
Yeah, you promised, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, exactly. The flip side of that is we have to help them... conspire to manage player expectations, which is a little bit frustrating.
Sure.
Cool stuff.
So you mentioned Hans Jägerblitzen, and also on your Crossing Zebras interview, you talked a lot about the CPM having been in attendance remotely.
Mm-hmm.
Was Dust a major issue covered? And if so, what was the tone of that discussion? Was it as peaceful as the rest of the summit? And if so, why, considering how widespread the malaise with Dust seems to be, both in the existing player community and in the gaming community at large?
Well, that was the one. That was one of the ones where we had a productive discussion that featured disagreements. You know, we had the CPM in the meetings. They were in more of the meetings than just the Dust ones. There were two Dust-specific meetings, Team True Grit and the Dust 514 link. Those actually were sort of one mega meeting. There were a couple of places where there's more than one thing on the schedule, but actually it was just, you know, one team for the entire time. So that was one mega meeting. Dust came up in a couple of other areas, you know, especially if you look at, like, future plans and other parts of the session. It was certainly something that we were talking about, even in sessions not dedicated to it, whenever it was something relevant. And that's not just because we had the CPM whispering in our ears. So... it came up, we were, you know, working, we've talked to the CPM about their issues with the game and their concerns, and that's stuff that we've been doing our best to, you know, help them get addressed from the Eve side, if, you know, if they do need to be addressed from the Eve side. But ultimately, we are the Council of Stellar Management, and so we can't, it's a bit out of scope for the CSM summit, and we can't fix everything magically wrong with the game.
Yeah, but I mean, there are some significant Eve connection, or there's supposed to be some significant Eve connection.
Yeah,
and it
sort of
is
hit that on the head right there.
Purview of the CSM. To follow up on that, as far as Dust links to Eve,
and that is most of where we were focusing our efforts. Is what the Dust link is, you know, what the Dust link could be, etc.
What was CCP's overall attitude toward that discussion, if you could characterize it?
Can't really. That's one that I'm just not even going to try and vagify.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, there was some conversation there.
I mean, you don't have to give any details, but was it positive? Was it hostile? Was it evasive.
It was not hostile, but it was also not one where we left all agreeing on everything forever.
Well, some friction going on there. Let's see. I've got a few other questions. Ripard's talk on his blog about the new way that CCP's GM team is enforcing naming of corporations and stuff with regards to real life entities. Didn't really come up? Even by him? He didn't mention it?
It got mentioned, but it wasn't a thing.
Okay. Also interesting. Did you guys meet with the GM team?
Yeah, we talked to plenty of them about various different parts of the game. I don't think there's a specific GM team meeting on here, but they were in a couple of different sessions. And, you know, we met them socially as well.
Okay, and also in your Crossing Zebras interview, you talked a little bit about how CCP was aware of several issues with the new player experience. That was also a peaceful session?
Yeah, it wasn't a new player experience session so much as it was the new player experience was something that was focused on in multiple sessions. CCP is aware that players do, you know, they don't come from the Stork with 5 million skill points and elite PvP experience. So that new players and how they get into the game and stuff was something that came up at several points, and I was quite pleased to be able to, you know, ask some questions and interject some stuff, especially after being elected on that platform.
Anything you are able or interested in talking about specifically? Let me put it like this. Was it more of a... when you were talking with them, was it more of a focus on the NP itself, balance mechanics, or marketing and expectation management when players are brought in?
NP itself. With a little bit of game mechanics as well. So, what are players doing when they come in, and what... how do they know what they know, all that kind of stuff. The questions being addressed by CCP. We had, trying to think about what else I have to talk about. We had an interesting meeting with the UI team. I was talking about that on Cross the Zebras as well, but just to sort of recap, we will be doing some work with them to get player input on the UI. Obviously the EVUI is a very big topic. It's something that they want to work on. And it's something that they want player input on. And so we're going to be engaging in communication. I was hoping to have details for you tonight, but I'm waiting on an email getting back to me. I was told it was going to be tonight, but everyone in Iceland has gone to sleep by now, so... Any other questions about the summit?
No, I think we're good. Thank you for all your hard work. I know it's a grueling trip, and they work you pretty hard, despite all the nannies giving you fuel.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any particular extra things. We saw, I guess the security session was also interesting. Some of that is going to be public. We saw a presentation by CCP Stillman that he gave at the... a security conference, so that presentation should be posted up in association with the security conference. It was really fascinating stuff. Got to hear a lot about how Eve detects botters, the kind of stuff that they do to figure out who's engaging in nefarious business, botting, RMT, etc. So it's interesting for people who are interested in how not to get banned. The sort of short version was basically that they log a lot of things and they see a lot of networks.
Botting is bad.
Botting is bad. I will go dredge up that link so that Alex can put it in the show notes, because it was interesting to watch if you are a data nerd.
True. In our final segment, I wanted to do a quick masterclass, 5-10 minutes, on talking about the new gang links, both what they're used for now, and some possible changes that might go into their use or go into their effect based on the rebalancing in 1.1, which just came out. So if you're not familiar with gang links, what they do is they're fitted onto certain ships, battlecruisers, command ships, carriers, I think motherships and titans as well. And they provide bonuses of varying types to everyone in the fleet below them in the fleet hierarchy. So if you're a squad commander, you would give your bonuses to everyone of your squad. Wing commander, everyone in your wing. Fleet commander, everyone in the fleet. They can be really powerful bonuses. Increase in your resistances. Have your remote repairs and local repairs activate faster. Use less cap. Lower your signature radius. Increase your speed.
Point range.
Increase your point range and your web range. Increase your ECM strength. Increase your ECM range. Increase your own sensor strength. And there's one for mining too, if you're into that sort of thing. But if you're listening to this podcast, unless you're listening to it while you're mining, you're probably not too into it. So, common use is to, have a really heavily tanked ship, like a Damnation, sporting these links. Or to have a really important link on a Tech 3. Or to have a Tech 3 specifically configured to have a gazillion links. I think the most you can do is 5-6.
Well, and you'd have the T3 too, because the 3 it was bonused for ran better than the command ships themselves. So it was a little bit alright, why would you go with a command ship?
And you would put that, because you'd have to make all kinds of fitting sacrifices to get so many links on. And you'd stick them out in a safe spot or somewhere in the system that you're going to be fighting in. Well, they're making some changes. They're getting rid of the Tech 3s being better than command ships. They're changing some of the bonuses. For the most part, they're reducing them, including a really stiff nerf to the point range one. Bad.
Like 13 kilometers, I think, or something.
But they are boosting the information links. They're redoing command ships so they can fit two types and get a bonus to them. So, the armor links and something else, for instance. And they're also doing some stat changes to make sure the command ships are a little more competitive on the field.
It's a really harsh nerf because they do ridiculously huge buffs. Or did. Before the change.
Yeah, it's a pretty significant kick in the pants to small gang armor warfare, kiting shield fleets.
C5 Care Bearers.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, Care Bearers in general make good use of the links in a way that is maybe less ridiculously overpowered than the PvP one. But I'm frankly not convinced by arguments that the small gang groups can't function without the links, especially since the groups that you're going to be fighting also don't have the old links.
Well, you assume the groups that you're fighting had links in the first place, usually. So we'll talk about the meta of this. The meta is that if you sunk one person, no one's really too happy about the off-grid links. I guess some solo players are. But, you're either putting an account out in the middle of nowhere, or you're using a player who's in a command link ship instead of something else. And for that trade-off, the rest of your fleet makes, they perform better. They tank harder, or they can reach out and point further. And if you're a small gang warfare group, you're probably putting more money into your ships since you don't expect them to be alpha striked in a big 500-on-500-00 fleet fight. So if you put in the preparation, the pilots, the money on the other ships to get these performance jumps. Then you can go out and fight, you know, your 20-man fleet versus a 40, 60-man fleet that's perhaps less organized and didn't make the same choices as you. And instead of just simple numbers deciding things, you would actually have a chance to use your money, skill, and forethought to overcome the odds. Which is fun. It is a fun thing to do. That's less possible. It also lowers the number of fleets that you can really prepare for. Like, if you're running a small armor fleet, if you think ahead and you put the links into your fleet and you get the Lokis with, like, the faction webs, you make sure that you have that. If you happen to run into a very fast kiting fleet, you have the tools that you need. You can't really overwhelm them, but at least you have the tools that you need to fight back in a limited way. The tools are much less effective now against a far fewer range of things, and I'm sure that's going to have some pretty significant consequences in, you know, actual boots on the ground PvP.
Yeah, the Lachesis won't be pointing out to what, like, 80k anymore.
I mean, it wasn't uncommon to have, like, 80k Proteus points.
Yeah, that too.
Which are themselves useless. You have to have a fleet around you that can do stuff with the Proteus that's doing that. But that's the whole point. You're working together. Now your 80k Proteus points gonna be what? 50-ish? That's a pretty big gap in terms of engagement range. So before, your tool of pointing things out that are at very extreme distances so you can go out and chase them is significantly kneecapped.
Or not even go out and chase them, just so you can snipe them.
Nah, usually it's go out and chase. Depends on what your fleet is. But yeah, I mean, it does impact guys like sniper battleships and things, sort of moves them specifically into the large fleet grouping. Unless you literally have enough people to hit them on the first strike.
Oh, you're talking small
gang, aren't
you? You
need somebody to point them. Yeah.
Yeah, he is. I mean, it's also true that there's a certain amount of, depending on how your small gang is set up and depending on the organization of the large gang, I've been on both sides of the sort of pointed by their hopes and dreams situation, in which you've got, you know, 10 guys and they only have 3 guys. And so obviously, you know, you can just blob them out and kill their super expensive ship. And when half of you are dead, you finally maybe start to wake up to the idea that that is not how this particular fight ends.
Which will itself be a little tougher, since they won't be able to tank as hard and they won't be able to go as fast to kite you.
I mean, I've seen and done that without links.
Sure. It's certainly possible. It just really lowers your opportunities to do that. It's restricting opportunities for fun. Which I'm not a fan of, generally speaking.
I mean, it's also taking away those resources. Like I say, it's still taking away those resources from the groups that you're fighting. You know, it's not like it isn't particularly. If it was that, you know, you could only receive this bonus if you were in a 20-man fleet, then sure, you get the whole fighting outnumbered thing. But as it is for the large gang meta, I think it's an improvement. And for the small gang meta, I don't see it as bad of a nerf as you do, I guess.
Well, for the large gang meta, it's not an improvement. It's just a wash. Because in large gang meta, it's likely that both sides will have the links. In small gang meta, it's not common that both sides have the same links. It just isn't. I mean, either one side brings them and the other doesn't, or there's not enough people to go around to make sure that you have all the links you need, so you have to make some choices about what your fleet is doing.
Right.
Or if you do, you know, have all the links and you don't really have that many other players, you're making other trade-offs, less DPS. Or less tackle, etc. don't know. I wish there were small gang voices on the CSM that were a little more forceful in this issue. I'd be very curious to talk to Rippard. And
I was gonna say, you want to talk to Rippard, and I have never seen Rippard not be forceful on an issue, so...
Was he forceful on this issue? Hmm.
I'm now trying to remember, because we're going back like 2 or 3 months. The CSM heard about these changes remarkably early, which was kind of awkward because I'm, you know, thinking about how links are being nerfed while my courtmates are talking about training their alts for link ships and ridiculous 8-link claymores.
So the question is, at what point in your fleet is a command link ship more valuable than using your utility high for something else, or using that pilot that would go into a command ship, you know, and getting an extra logistic ship or getting an extra damage ship? And that's a very interesting question. Previously, I think the rule of thumb was if you had 4 guardians, it was worth it to have a command ship buffing that. Rather than have like an additional command ship. With the nerfs, I'm not sure if that'll be the case. It might go up to 5 or maybe even 6 with the mind link nerf.
Where does like put a link in one of your battle cruisers fall in this?
That's a much more interesting question in some ways, because the battle cruisers, while they can fit the modules, they don't get additional bonuses to their effectiveness. So it's less of a consequence in that you're still a battle cruiser, you're still an effective damage dealer with an effective tank, probably some tackle. And especially with the new links, which are going to be easier to fit, you won't face as stiff of a fitting penalty for you fitting them as you would previously, whereas they were pretty competitive with things like neutralizers and stuff, which in some ways did a little more and were easier to fit. Now they're going to be more on that level. So it's, you know, it's tough. I couldn't even say for sure what I would rather have. But I think if you've already got... You have to think of what else could be there. Smart bomb or a neutralizer are pretty much the two main things that go in the utility high slots of a ship that are super useful.
Well, there's like another question there, though, isn't like an earlier question than that is, because the command ships are getting bonuses to 2 different types of links now, but they're not able to fit 6 links. They can still only fit 3. So if you wanted to get the full effectiveness of the ship, you'd have to nerf it with command processors. So there's like an initial decision of what links am I fitting out of that, because I have more options now.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone would burn a command processor on a regular battlecruiser, though.
I don't think they would either.
Yeah, I think if you've got a dedicated neutralizing boat and a ship that's fitting smart bombs, you really don't need more than one. At that point, I think you're in good company to use a mind link on a battlecruiser. But you just got to keep in mind that you're not really getting tons out of it.
I mean, the mind links are also cheaper now.
Say again?
The mind links are also cheaper now, correct? Like,
I presume, but
let's look.
I know that the mining link certainly is. That took a giant nosedive, but
and they increased the skills for it too, didn't they? Oh no, they didn't. Never mind.
Yeah, I just seem to recall that they added them to some LP store or something like that. So now you can get mine links for much cheaper than you could originally. So it's
that
sort
was
of
never really
it
a
out.
Problem either, because if you're going to spend the money to get in a command ship or a Tech 3, and that's
I'm
already a
300-something
mil investment.
Though.
Oh, in a BC with a mind link? Sure. But, even with that, it's not... Because the command ships and the Tech 3s both get a ship bonus, like a per-level bonus to the strength of the mind links. Or, it's not the mind links, the gang links, which the battle cruisers don't get. They just get the base bonus. Which,
right.
In some links... is still significant, but in others, like particularly tackle range, you really feel that gap, and it's pretty significant.
Yeah, actually the mining link is the only one that's gone down in price. Everything else has kind of fluctuated, generally trended up over the last few months, which is why I'm surprised, but I guess you'd still need them for the Navy Mind Links, which bonus 2 specs at once.
Yeah, Navy Mind Links are good for your new command ships.
Yeah, it looks totally awesome.
That's an interesting idea.
Because then, I mean, that makes, like, interchangeability. Like, you don't have to have the things fit. You can put them in your cargo hold. Granted, they're kind of big, but if you're only hauling one or two, you got a carrier, you got an Orca, you got a Rourke, you got a station, you got an SMA, you can refit off of any of those things. You can adapt now easily to any sort of situation with less command ships than you did before.
I was going to say, if you have a carrier that you can bring in, even if you're roaming in a smaller gang and you're just using it to refit in, like, the system next door or whatever, the carrier can bring in the extra links.
There's not much interchangeability in the links. Usually it's pretty clear which ones that you're going to want. Like,
really?
For instance,
if you came up against an ECM heavy team in your armor comp, you wouldn't want to throw a couple info links on your EOS?
If I was going to have an EOS, I'd have, under the new EOS, I would have the armor resist link, the repair duration link, and the sensor strength link on all the time. And I would, the only reason I would take one of those off would be like if we were repairing a POS or something, and the capacitor would be a big deal.
I meant ABSO, Damnation, not the EOS. EOS got the Skirm.
Right, and so the EOS is Armor Skirm.
Yeah.
That one's a little trickier, but even still, the resist bonus, always going to be good. The rep bonus, unless you have no logistic ships in your fleet, and no local tanking, which is a rare thing, usually you have one or the other, then you're going to want both of those. And then for the next one, in what situations wouldn't you want, you know, improved link, I guess, or improved point range. I guess maybe if you're supporting a frigate fleet that can range control easily, in which case you'd want probably the speed one.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe the SIG one.
You'd want the speed one.
I would think you'd want the speed one as well. And that's one that I might consider throwing a command processor in so you could do the speed and the SIG at the same time. But outside of a pure frigate fleet, you're going to want the tackle range. It's just one of those things. There's really not too many circumstances where you'd want to completely drop one for something else. Generally speaking, you're only bringing the command ship because it complements your fleet anyway, and there are only so many links that do that. Anyway, I highly encourage you guys to check out my links if you haven't flown in a fleet with them. You know, if your fleet's getting to the point where you've got 3 or 4 logistics in it and said supporting ships, start thinking about including command ships or linked Tech 3s in your fleets. They can pay dividends, they can improve the survivability of your logistics ships. Pretty tremendously, actually.
Improve the repability of everything else, too.
And if you like flying utility ships, they're a lot of fun to fly, because they are definitely that.
Yeah, I mean, because they don't do super damage in most cases. They're a good ship to, like, use a high slot for a smart bomb or something like that, or
mid-slots
if you've got extra mid-slots.
All that shit.
Tracking disruptors, remote sensor boosting is a good thing. I used to use my old EOS with a dual remote sensor booster for gate camping.
You know, I used to use my Damnation with 2 tracking disruptors, and nobody figured it out.
Alrighty, and that is it for episode 57. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll, leave a comment, click the store button, or just put in a donation. Check out welovefine.com/eve. Really great designs for us. Definitely encourage you to, if you're a fan of the podcast, check it out. You can reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir.com, and apply to join us or Noir Academy on the forums at www.noirmarks.com. Fly safe, everybody.
I was walking down the street when out the corner of my eye I saw a pretty little thing approaching me. She said, I never seen a man who looks so all alone. Could you use a little company? If you pay the right price,
price. Your evening will be nice and you can go and send me on my way. I said, you're such a sweet young thing, why you do this to yourself? She looked at me and this is what she said. Oh, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay, I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know I can't slow down, I can't hold back, though you know I wish I could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. Not even 15 minutes later, I'm still walking down the street when I saw the shadow of a man creep out of sight. He said, give me all you got. I want your money, not your life. If you try to make a move, I won't think twice. I told him, you can have my cash, but first you know I gotta ask, what made you wanna live this kind of life? He said, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay, I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know I can't slow down, I can't hold back, though you know I could. Oh no, there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. Yeah. Well, now a couple hours passed and I was sitting in my house. The day was winding down and coming to an end. And so I turned to the TV and flipped it over to the news. And what I saw couldn't comprehend. I saw a preacher man in cuffs. He taking money from the church. He stuffed his bank account with righteous dollar bills. But even still, I can't say much because I know we're all the same. Oh yes, we all seek out to satisfy those thrills. You know that.